The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm in deep conversations, guys, with deep into negotiations with @Teast on the Twitter. Looks like we're going to have a little bet between Teast and I. The Teast, he's taking Yuli Gurriel. I'm taking Jose Abreu, who has a higher OPS in 2023. Which side of that bet do you
like? I like your odds.
Yeah, I'm on the Abreu side.
You like
that, George?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm taking the Jose Abreu side.
I feel bad. I feel bad that I've taken advantage of Tyler's. How do I want to say this? Do I want to be really mean?
Yeah,
no, I won't be really mean. I'm sad that I took advantage of his loyalty to Yuli Gurriel. I don't see any way I'm losing this bet. I'm not even sure Yuli Gurriel is going to get enough plate appearances to qualify for
now,
this bet, though.
Much honest. Like if the tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, I have to ask this question because I believe that you're the overwhelming favorite to win the bet. But did you actually win the bet unless you actually receive what was bet upon? Because you've won bets in the past with other listeners. And the problem is that when you don't actually reap the benefits by actually substantively having something to say you won this, it really kind of leaves you with an empty feeling. Like, did you really win it all?
Yeah, it's the pride, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Just to have scoreboard on them. Like, I'm still waiting for King of Twitch to pay me my lunch. I'm still waiting for Dick Willie to give me my my bottle of whiskey. I believe in King maybe more than Dick. I'm not sure that I should because I won that bet a long time ago, and I still haven't had my my lunch. I still haven't got my lunch from Lemmy either. I want to bet against Lemmy too. Anyways, Blankers, I think you've been very fair about criticism for Rafael Montero. I think that the way that you've talked about it, it's like, okay, like this is something I'm watching this season. Rafael Montero, he's only had one good year in the bigs in the history of his career, so I'm going to watch to see what he does in year two. Was last year a one-hit wonder, or is this something that can continue? You were, I think, very fair with the salary of Rafael Montero, where he got a pretty decent average annual value compared to what was projected for Rafael Montero to have an average annual value. I think that you've been very fair, you yourself, when it comes to Rafael Montero. It's like, okay, let's watch these things. But I'm starting to hear a lot of slander in this city, not from you, about Rafael Montero that I find to be ridiculous, Blankers. Like, I got to, and a lot of times I react to reaction, and this is a case where I'm reacting to the reaction of Rafael Montero 2 days ago having a lousy game. I've heard people say that Rafael Montero is no longer a top five reliever on the Houston Astros. Who are five relievers better than Rafael Montero? What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
The second argument that I've been hearing is that the signing of Rafael Montero and the contract that you gave him becoming like cost prohibitive from you signing other players. The Astros are almost $20 million under the competitive balance tax. If Jim Crane wanted to sign somebody else, Jim Crane has the resources to sign somebody else.
That's the thing that I was going to say. We kept saying they could have gone and gotten another utility. They could have gotten another outfielder. They could have done other things because they had the means to go do it. So you can do a lot. Look, and I think that when you look at Montero, the other thing you have to consider is, especially early in the season, he was pitching the second night in a row. You know, he's going to be hyper-scrutinized because of the contract, because he got, in a lot of people's mind, overpaid, because people questioned the length, the amount of money, and then looked at the body of work, and I've been quick to point this out, he had a career year last year. Now, that doesn't mean that he can't have another one, but the chances are when you look at the other years he's had in Major League Baseball, if he comes back to the norm even a little bit, people are going to be pissed off because the money that you went out and paid and the fact that, from a lot of people's belief, the market wouldn't have dictated that he got paid that much by any other team maybe someone desperate for a closer or someone back in the bullpen that felt like this was a grasp at straw move. But I don't think that anybody thought that he was worth the money that he got. When you look at his whole career, he wasn't a consistent dominant relief pitcher or starter. He's done both. And that the Astros had enough in their bullpen that they didn't have to have him back. But once you brought him back, it was going to be an unfair criticism because he was going to be watched like a hawk. They weren't going to let anything go with him, and you're seeing it early on. You're being irrational if you're thinking that this is just, you know, this complete and utter, just complete meltdown. He pitched the night before. We know that pitchers, especially early in the season, they're not perfect all the time. And aside from the regular season that Stanek had a year ago, your ERA is going to fluctuate. You're going to have a bad game sprinkled in here and there. We've had many of the bullpen already show you that more than one time. Why does he not get the pass? Probably because of the contract.
Here's, like, your points are all accurate. I feel like Montero never really had, like, his previous history in Major League Baseball was always kind of, like, random. Like, he was brought up as a highly thought of starting pitching prospect. That never really panned out. He had a history of a lot of injuries. So he was always kind of pitching in weird scenarios. And then last year it all worked out. He was really good and had a 2.37 ERA and signed a 3-year deal with the Houston Astros that pays him, on average, $11.5 million. So, like, yeah, his previous history pitching wasn't great. He hasn't had a tremendous body of work when you look at previous to last year in 2022, and he has an arsenal of stuff that's very good, in my opinion. But he's no longer a top five reliever for the Houston Astros is flat out ridiculous. He's still one of your better relievers. Is he top one? No. Is he top two? No. Is he top five?
Yeah,
he's top five. Also, the money conversation that we're talking about, it was an overpay in terms of projections, because he was projected to get like $8 million, got 11 and a half, something like that. Like a $3 million, you know, over projection of what we saw. One, it didn't cost you another player because the Astros still have nearly $20 million to spend ahead of the competitive balance tax. And oh yeah, if you want to go over that as an owner, you can go over that as an owner. But then, like, okay, well, who else would the Astros have signed? They wanted a reliever. They wanted to bring back one arm to their bullpen. They wanted to make sure that they kept a strength of this team. You can say a big reason why they won the World Series last year was because they had the best bullpen in baseball. So they wanted to continue to have the best bullpen in baseball. They didn't want to break up the best bullpen in baseball. So who did the $11.5 million, where else would you have spent that? If you look at some of the free agent signings this past offseason, Blankers, and people that were in the same ballpark of Rafael Montero and what he got, Sean Manaea, who is lousy, got $12.5 million a year. You could say, well, he can be a starter. Okay, fine. We'll throw Sean Manaea out of the conversation. Stop me when you hear a pitcher that you rather have over Rafael Montero, who got $11.5 million, which is the seventh highest paid Houston Astro. He's not second. He's not third. He's the seventh highest paid Houston Astro, which I find ironic that we spend all offseason saying we want to spend Jim Crane's money, then Jim Crane spends money, and then we knock Jim Crane for spending money. I find the irony of that to be hilarious. But name me, I'm going to just rattle off a bunch of names here. Stop me whenever you hear a name that you rather have in your bullpen ahead of Rafael Montero. These are free agent relievers that signed this past offseason. Would you rather have Taylor Rogers at $11 million?
No.
Would you rather have Craig Kimbrell at $10 million?
No.
David Robinson, 37-year-old, at $10 million. Matt Moore at $7.5 million. This is the price of doing business in Major League Baseball.
David Robertson?
David Robertson, yeah.
Okay. There's a guy that, you know, I've been high on in the past. I get he's a little older, but not at that price point.
I think he's a solid reliever.
Yeah.
He didn't have as good a year last year as Rafael Montero did. He's off to a really good start this season. But that's the price of doing business. The price of having a seventh or eighth inning reliever signed to your team this offseason was about $10 to $12 million. Rafael Montero got 11.5. So we're basing, like, what we thought the projections were going to be, not reality. not what they actually signed for. The projections is an overspend for Rafael Montero. Here's the last point I'm going to make about this overreaction that we've had with Rafael Montero. Now, look, I understand that we're reacting to baseball games every single day, and it's a weird thing to do because they play 162 games, and you're trying to have these hot takes about one specific game. So, like, I understand it. I hate whenever we make these, like, rash decisions that Rafael Montero should be the mop-up guy suddenly. It is not a top-five reliever on this team based on one outing. I find that to be silly and ridiculous, but I understand the conversation. I understand where it's coming from. Rafael Montero, when he got hit the other day, when he got you know, put Brian Abreu in a tough spot, bases loaded, nobody out. We know the story. Brian Abreu got out of it. Rafael Montero's ERA entering that appearance was 2.25. Better than his ERA last year. Mm-hmm. Before that outing, his ERA was better than it was last season. Secondly, look, Abreu helped him out. We get it. It saved Montero's ERA. Montero still has a 3.38 ERA. That's still a solid ERA. You know what Ryan Pressly's ERA is? 6.14.
Yep, yep.
Stop saying that Rafael Montero is the fifth best reliever on this team and that he's lousy. He was overpaid. He wasn't overpaid.
I'll tell you what.
He was paid average to what other relievers were paid. His numbers are still good even though he had a lousy outing.
I'll tell you exactly some of the other things that come into play too, Jeremy, is exactly what you said as it relates to who came in to save the day. Brian Abreu. So now the criticism becomes, and the easier way to move him down the pie chart in terms of the pecking order, is the fact that Brian Abreu is the guy that bailed him out. Brian Abreu is the guy that everybody instantaneously, including we had this discussion, and I said he should move up to being your setup guy in the eighth inning. And so with that, people are saying, well, the guy that did what you were supposed to do is the guy that should jump you. And, oh, by the way, while we're at it, then we might as well shove him down the list even more, because Stanek had that great regular season ERA a year ago. And, you know, you've got, you know, all these other guys. You really don't. I mean, we keep talking about the luxury of having five guys with plus-plus fastballs that can be interchanged and intertwined throughout a long 162-game season that can do what you need to do in the back of the bullpen. So to suddenly think that he's worse than Phil Maton, to suddenly think that he's worse than Seth Martinez, to suddenly think that he's worse than a lot of these guys that are in your bullpen as kind of just, you know, mop-up type guys, and not in the combination, in the conversation of the guys that we've been talking about all along. When you talk about Pressly and you talk about Abreu and you're talking about Neris and you're talking about Stanek and you're talking about Montero, those are your top five relievers. So to suddenly think he's not in that conversation is ludicrous. I think that, again, all of this stems from the fact that people are pissed off that he got overpaid. They hate people that make money. They get jealous of the fact that he got more than they thought
he
deserved.
He was overpaid, though.
But a lot of people do. Because you remember, at the time that he was signed, though,
11 and a half. Like, this was the going rate this offseason for relievers in baseball.
I think he was a little overpaid.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because he was signed first.
That's where I was going.
And I think that Jim Crane did overpay him a little bit to keep him and stop him from going elsewhere. And I think the contracts that followed were a reflection of what the Astros did with his contract.
And it was Jim Crane. It was Jim Crane, not a regular general manager.
Yeah, they made the market higher than I think it really was. And that's where, like, you can say he's overpaid, but they made the right decision bringing him back.
Okay, you could say he's overpaid, but his salary is right there with all of these other relievers who are probably not as good,
right,
that are also making $11 million, $10 million.
But, Jeremy, you know how that goes. We're just watching it happen with Lamar Jackson because of the Deshaun Watson contract.
But if Crane doesn't set the market, somebody else does.
Right, but what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be fair or make, like, analytical sense. But at the end of the day, when you look at it now, as you're looking at it and saying, you know, he wasn't overpaid. At the start of the time when he was a free agent and he was signed, everybody was still on the market pretty much. And Jim Crane just went out and I'm sure also said, I'm not a general manager, but I know I had the best bullpen in baseball a year ago. I'm going to do everything I can to keep them together, and this is what I'm going to pay Montero. But people immediately came out and said that they overpaid. People immediately were like, ooh. But then, now that because they set the market, they rehung the bar. Now you're looking at it, and other baseball teams with other agents, when they're dealing with them, are going, hey, Montero just got this. My guy's got to be getting something like that, and teams gave in. So I think it's just he was the guy that reset the bar that created a new market for relief pitchers this offseason, too. I just think that has to be factored in.
I think a lot of times, too, we base stuff based on what, like, people that type stories are talking about. Like, we look at mock drafts. Oh, well, CJ Stroud is the, like, consensus number two pick in mock drafts. And then all of a sudden, NFL draft, he went number 11 and be like, oh, my goodness, what happened? Well, I trust the NFL GMs more than I trust mock drafts. I trust in Major League Baseball general managers and their market more than I trust some nerds on Spotrac trying to determine what the projected salary of relievers are going to be. Rafael Montero's salary, average annual, is very normal compared to other relievers that are 7th, 8th inning guys that also signed this offseason. Did Crane establish that market? That's fair to say. He was the first one. So, yeah, that's fair to say. If he wasn't, would somebody else have done it? Yeah, I think so. But this overreaction of Rafael Montero being a lousy pitcher, it needs to stop. 713-780-ESP at HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Star, starter, or bust? Joe George is going to give us three draft prospects that then we have to tell him if there's a star, starter, or bust in that trio. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Couple of Montero texts before we talk star, starter, bust. 713-780-ESPN if you want to play along. Ocho is the strongest advocate for Montero, but Blankers is right. All he has is a plus fastball with subpar secondary pitches, and he can't be trusted. Okay. That's fair critique. I think Blanker's critiques have been very, very fair. To say that he's not a top five pitcher on this, a top five reliever on this team is flat out outrageous. And to say that he basically needs to be a mop-up guy and an emergency-only guy is ludicrous. 2-1-2-8 with the Astros bullpen in the playoffs is not sustainable for an entire season. Everyone needs to take a breath. Look, Montero had a 2.25 ERA before a lousy outing, which was better than his ERA last year. Rafael Montero is going to have an ERA. I think he's going to be a sub-3 ERA guy. But around 3, like that's the price for price poker in Major League Baseball for a reliever.
Do we forget Ryan Pressly's had a few hiccups this year?
He's like double ERA.
Do we forget that Neris has had a few hiccups already this year? Do we forget that Stanek looks like that maybe Dusty was onto something, that regardless of how much fool's gold the regular season was or wasn't a year ago, that he isn't the same pitcher and he's not as effective? So it's easy to criticize the one guy that got the contract in the offseason, but you can't keep a blind eye and say, well, the rest of the bullpen has been lights out, because they haven't.
I think we fall into this thought as well, that like relievers are supposed to be perfect. That if you lead 2-1 in the ninth inning, that you should win the game. That if you enter the game in the seventh with a 2-1 lead, that you should not give up a run. Like, we fall into this thought that every reliever should never allow a run. Like, I really do think that. 5030 says, man, it's not our money. Why should anyone even care? That's the other part of this. Like, baseball is not a salary cap league. Two, the Astros still have money under the competitive balance tax if we were to use the competitive balance tax as the salary cap, which, quite frankly, Jim Crane does kind of use that competitive balance tax as the salary cap for the payroll of this team. The Astros still have $18 million under the competitive balance tax. Like, Montero did not preclude you from signing somebody else. And the irony to me is hilarious, where all offseason people are like, well, it's not my money, spend it. It's not my money, I spend it. Rafael Montero signs for $2 million more than what was projected, even though the rest of baseball follows up and signs relievers for about the same amount of money as Rafael Montero, and he's so overpaid, I can't believe Jim Crane did that. What are we doing? Like, what? Like, that is the biggest hypocrisy I've ever heard.
I think the other thing, too, that I think we're even sliding by a little bit on is the fact that the owner was making general manager's decisions. And the owner has zero experience as a general manager. All he knows is he signs the checks. And suddenly, you know, he knows he's being watched too, and he thinks, oh, this is the home run. This is what everybody wants, to keep this bullpen intact, and I'm just going to go out and do this to start my brief tenure as general manager of this squad. And you know what? Do I think that if there was a real experienced general manager making that decision right from the start of the offseason, would it have been different? The only thing that I think that might have changed is that number. I think it might have been down slightly, because I think an experienced general manager would have crunched some numbers, brought to the table with Montero's agent, and said, you know, this is where the range where we think we're in, and maybe negotiated the money down. But I'm firmly in belief that when the owner says, I want to keep this guy and keep the best bullpen in baseball intact, that a general manager has to do what the owner says. So he'd still be here. I think he'd be at a lesser dollar amount, and that might have relaxed some of the criticism that fans are giving him.
What did it cost you, though?
I understand that, Jeremy. I don't want to revisit that too much because you and I are on the same page. But at the same time, I think the fans have a hard time realizing what the market turned out to be and what everybody is making now. And all they remember is right from the jump, it seems like he got overpaid. All you heard, like you said, from the people that were talking baseball and the breaking news guys and everything else was that the Astros overpaid to bring back Montero. So that's what sticks in people's heads.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get to star, starter, bust. Joe's going to give us three draft prospects, and we have to crown one of them our star, one of them our starter, and one of them our bust. Joe made this exercise very difficult yesterday.
Oh,
I'm hoping with a Friday show, maybe he gives us a little bit of a wiggle room here. All right, Joe, what you got?
And I'm just like, this feels like my one time where I can like personally attack Jeremy Branham.
Why would you want to do that?
You constantly since I joined the show have tried to put Joel and I and back us into a corner with your tough questions. So this is my opportunity to really back you into a corner. So star, starter, bust. Anthony Richardson. Jalen Carter. Jordan Addison.
Blankers, lead us off. This is easy. You didn't achieve your desires here.
I'm going to say star, Jalen Carter. I'm going to say starter, Addison. I'm going to say bust, Richardson.
Man, we're simpatico. I like to fight with you. I like to argue with you. I like a good confrontation, but I'm right there with Blankers.
If I believe Richardson is at least 2 years away from being a starter in this league, no matter how many letters he writes to general managers to tell everybody he's ready and how many people that he wants to, you know, talk his way into believing he's going to be a star someday, that possibility is too far away. And at the end of the day, I don't think he gets where he thinks he can go. I think that everything that we're criticizing, and rightfully so in a lot of ways, about Jalen Carter has been non-football related. I think that once he's on the field and what the tape shows you and what people have said to you is the fact that this dude has football talent. So therefore, we all know that whatever checkered past players have come from, if they can play in the NFL and they prove themselves that they are going to be and they can be dominant, they are going to get theirs. And I think that Carter has the ability to do that. I like Jordan Addison a lot. I just don't know that Jordan Addison's a star per se, but I think he could be a starter in this league.
Yeah, see, Jeremy, I thought I was going to trick you up with Carter because like you're so out on him. You won't draft
him. He's off my board.
You wouldn't take him with the 12th pick if he's there for the Texans.
Nope.
And so
I could throw him.
So you're going to put him as your star, but you wouldn't take him for the Texans at 12?
Nope, I wouldn't. I think he's going to land. Yeah, because I'm not going to be in that business. I'm not going to be in the Jalen Carter business. But I could. But and again, the three options you gave me,
I
don't see any one of them being a star. So like, which one of them has the best star potential? I think it's Jalen Carter. Jalen Carter is the best football player in this draft. But Jalen Carter has the biggest red flags in this draft, and I don't trust him as far as I could throw him, which not very far. I'm not very strong. He's a very large man.
And especially depends on what time when he weighs in. He might be larger.
True, exactly. But I think he has the biggest star potential in this draft because, look, this isn't a hot take. Many people think he's the best football player in this draft.
No, I agree. I thought it was going to trip you up. I
understand.
Expected.
I get where you're coming from, but I'll give Jalen Carter the star. I think he's going to land in a good spot. Well, you know, with my theory, somebody's going to give him an opportunity. He's going to land in a good spot, hopefully away from all sorts of trouble. They're going to give him the Dez Bryant treatment, all of that, make sure he's a very good football player. Jordan Addison, I feel about Jordan Addison the way I feel about five receivers in this draft, roughly. I think that there's a bunch of solid receivers in this draft. I don't think there's a star in this draft. I don't think there's a ton of bad receivers in this draft. I think there's a lot of really good wide receivers in this draft from late first round to late third, early fourth. So I that's why I don't want to reach on a receivers because I think there's a lot of solid receivers. So Addison is going to be my starter, and then You know how I feel about Anthony Richardson.
Yeah,
I'll go a step further than what Blanker said. I think he's 2 years away from being 2 years away. He throws footballs the same way that Shaq throws free throws. He throws bricks. I need a quarterback who throws things that are better than bricks. So Anthony Richardson's my bust, Joe George.
The only I think you could probably make an argument for Addison as the star once we know where he lands. Like if he ends up being, you know, a Kansas City Chief or a Buffalo Bill and he's a late first-round pick, it might change our perspective on this one. The other team I'm really intrigued by, just because of how much success they had together, I'm fascinated, like, if he ends up in Pittsburgh.
About the same thing.
Because, like, Kenny Pickett and him were, I mean, he had, like, a couple thousand yards receiving that year in Pittsburgh before he went to USC. Like, those guys know each other so well. And, like, and George Pickens is a fine wide receiver for the Steelers, but if you put Addison
Johnson too,
yeah, and Deontay Johnson, like if you put Addison and Pickett back together, like it kind of elevates his like fantasy stock, I would say, like going into a season.
Well, and you know, Pitt wants another receiver. They've been talking about moving up in the draft to get what they might not have to.
I think they need a lot.
Well, they do, but I also think that they might not have to go anywhere, and he'll be there when they're picking.
Yeah, so mine would be the same. I thought I was going to trip you up here with your disdain for Jalen Carter. I thought maybe I could get you to not call Jalen Carter your star. So plan failed today.
Do you think the Bears will take him?
No, I think that they're going to take Skoronski. But frankly, I was listening to Daniel Jeremiah's media press conference call or something that he was doing, and he threw out, "Don't be surprised if the Bears take Bijan." Mm. So.
If he's there.
I'm just curious what teams, for all the teams that came right out of the gates or to Jeremy's point of view, just said they're out on Jalen Carter. I'm curious the teams, because again,
I think he goes to Seattle.
I think it makes sense. And I think that Pete Carroll's the guy that with the Legion of Boom, that he brought a lot of different personalities from a lot of different backgrounds and even Marshawn, and just said, if you can play football, you can play for me. And I think that Seattle would be one of the teams that would be probably welcoming. I think Pittsburgh is another team that would be welcoming to a Jalen Carter because of a Mike Tomlin, because of the fact that you're going to walk into a situation where you know who's boss and they're not going to take any crap. But I think that I'm intrigued by which teams are still open to Jalen Carter.
I think probably more than I've given credit for, to be honest. I think he goes top 10. I'm going to have my Branham mock a little bit later. I think it'll be a top 10 pick. Pittsburgh, from like the setting, I agree with you, Blankers. Yeah. He makes perfect sense from the setting.
They don't have the pick.
But also, like what Joe was saying, they have so many holes. Like, I can't imagine them trading up, losing a ton of draft capital, and then taking Carter there. Like, I think they're going to sit back. I am fascinated with what Jordan Addison would look like in Pittsburgh, too, but I feel like they have so many other holes. I don't see Pittsburgh going receiver. 713-780-ESPN. Anthony Richardson, Jalen Carter, Jordan Addison. Who's the star? Who's the starter? Who's the bust? 713-780-3776. Rockets are in the business. They're in the head coaching business. Who is the leading candidate? The latest names on the second round of interviews coming up with the Houston Rockets. Who do you want to be the next Rockets head coach? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about Apollo Men's Health. I was there bright and early this morning. I saw Dr. O and the staff. They are absolutely fantastic because they take care of you. They care. They're nice people, and they want to get you where you want to go. So it's essential that you look at the website, apollomh.com, and see all the different services they offer, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. You know you're lacking and don't just feel like your old self in a lot of ways, and you're wondering if there's anything that can be done. See if Apollo Men's Health can help you, because it's more than just men's health issues. They help men and women on a daily basis find more energy in their daily lives. It could be from getting everything on your to-do list done to having more time to go to the gym or spend more time with the family. All those things and more, all can be handled in one place. Two locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston. If you go to apollomh.com and you see some services that might be beneficial, book an appointment. Go in open-minded and check out everything that they have to offer. Tell them where you're lacking. Tell them what you'd like to do. They'll put you on a plan that works. They'll get you the results that you truly need. They're going to take care of you every step of the way. Mention my name, Joel Blank, and you'll get a free body composition analysis, which can help you get started on your workouts. It can chart your progress with how your body fat has gone down, your muscle mass has gone up, and chart the important numbers. Get one every so often and see the progress that you're making, even when sometimes you don't feel like it. If you want to recover quicker after a workout, HGH peptide therapy. If you're looking for just a little more energy and you're not looking at any kind of hormone therapy, try a B12 shot. Tell them I sent you by. You can get a B12 shot or a body comp on your first visit in. Two locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston. Tell them I sent you by. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the latest in the Houston Rockets coaching search in 3 minutes. First, let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, for our guy Julian. Julian, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Happy Friday to you.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I wanted to talk about the impatience of y'all Texans fans. Y'all don't know what it's like to go through a 2-14, a 1-15, seven coordinators in 7 years. I know what it's like to go through some bullcrap. These guys act like y'all have done something. Y'all haven't even made it to the AFC Championship. Need to slow down a little bit. Y'all talk about the Rockets' success. What success? The Western Conference Finals? That's not a success, brother.
All right, Julian. Appreciate the call. Thank you. He just wants to go toe-to-toe with Houston sports fans. But I admire that. I appreciate that. I'm good with that. You're kind of all over the place, though. Like, you're talking about the failures of the Houston Texans, and then you're talking about, like, how they've been good recently. So I'm not really sure where Julian was going with that, other than wanting to blast Houston sports fans.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, it's the level of impatience that you have, and then the criteria as to why you think that you should be justified in not having any. You know, he's a Niners fan. Great. They went through some lean years, quote-unquote, but more so than not, the franchise has had a whole bleep ton of success. And I think that, you know, I guess you can wear bigger underwear and you can strut around and talk about what you've done, but it's all about what you're going to do. And I think that people just are desperate to win, and they're, you know, they crave winning, and there's nothing wrong with that, but there has to be a realistic approach to it too, instead of just being like this snap of fingers and turn it around overnight, because it just ain't happening like that.
It's also like, I guess it's a wild comparison, because like the 49ers fire Jim Harbaugh, then they hire Jim Tomsula. After one season, they fire him. Then they hire Chip Kelly, and after one season, fire him. Exactly what the Houston Texans did. The 49ers have not had a franchise quarterback since Colin Kaepernick basically got ran out of the league. So like they had a franchise quarterback, then they lost him by nothing of injury or trade, just like the Texans with Watson. Like, the 49ers and the Texans are basically the same franchise right now, except that the 49ers, like, their process started 6 years ago. So like, the Texans have a reason to be impatient, because it's been a disaster. I also think you can compare like a flagship franchise like the Texans.
But you say they have a reason to be impatient, but they can't have unrealistic expectations. They'd like to see progress, but they can't be impatient enough to think that they should be winning immediately.
No, but like the impatience is really about the quarterback position. Like, this franchise is 21, 22 years old, and for two short seasons, three really, you had a franchise quarterback. You had Matt Schaub, I guess, as well. So, like, what, 5 out of 23 years you've had anything of relevancy? People are impatient because they want a quarterback, and they're upset that the Texans are not
going to take one. You're sleeping on Tony Banks. That dude
was
unreal.
But is that, though, like, I think it's flawed logic. I mean, to be completely honest with you.
I agree, like, but I think that's what it comes down to.
I rather have a winning football team than a good quarterback. Like, would you rather be –
I agree.
Would you rather be the San Francisco 49ers, or would you rather be the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson's last year that he played football with the Texans?
Were they 4-12?
Yeah.
And he led the league in passing,
yep,
I think.
Yep.
Like, they had a franchise quarterback. Everybody tells us he's a franchise quarterback. He signed the biggest deal at the time. He was traded for 3 first-round draft picks. He won 4 games with your team. Would you rather have Deshaun Watson with 4 wins? Would you rather have the San Francisco 49ers with Mr. Irrelevant?
Yeah, I mean, look.
I'd rather have San Fran.
Winning is what matters most. So if you're winning and getting to, you know, conference championship games and have aspirations of having a Super Bowl caliber roster, you know, absolutely that takes precedence.
75 says Julian needs to go back to his tent in San Francisco. 713-780-ESPN.
Oh, he's at a truck stop showering in the rain somewhere.
Could be in Memphis. Jeff, let's go out to the HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. Jeff, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. Just a quick scenario. Kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it. I'm going to play Casario for a minute. Let me get through it, because I know it's going to – I'm going to throw one name and you're going to automatically poo-poo it. But this is based on having 6 skill position players locked up on rookie deals, or in the second year of their locked up in rookie deals. Second pick, Bryce Young if he's there. If he's not, Will Anderson. Number 12, Bijan Robinson. Second pick, first pick, second round, Darnell Washington. That gives you Pierce, Bijan Robinson. That gives you Collins and Mechie. That gives you Dalton Schultz and Darnell Washington behind him learning. You give Davis Mills a chance with some skill around him, and then you supplement the rest of this year's draft, filling in holes or through free agency next year. If you don't get Bryce Young, you can go for a pick, first pick, quarterback, and continue to fill holes. But you've got six skill position players locked up on rookie deals.
I mean,
appreciate the call, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for listening. You know what? I get it that the Davis Mills is the name that's polarizing that everybody's going to poo-poo on. Even if it's Case Keenum, you know, I think it's just it's having the stones to be able to just basically say, we can wait a year and still find our guy. It's kind of like to your theory, Jeremy, of having a winning team versus having a franchise quarterback. If you're getting closer to building a winning team, not that the Colts are the example for how you can do that and then find a quarterback and make it work, but the Niners are, that you can build everything else up and then deal with quarterback along the way. I don't really dislike a whole lot other than the fact that Davis Mills, I think, is nowhere near ever quarter starting games for the Texans again or shouldn't be. Yeah. But other than that, I don't mind building up best player availables, and with that, I would also include trading downs and doing what's necessary to even add more to Jeff's theory.
Yeah, it's probably like a plan F. I think people would probably run Jeff out of Houston. If you're committed to the BPA and you're committed to Will Anderson at two and you don't love any of the quarterbacks in this draft, you don't want to trade for Trey Lance, I don't think you have another option. Like, if you punt on QB because you don't like Stroud, you don't like Levis, you don't like Richardson, you're going to take the best defensive player at two and Will Anderson. You're going to take BPA and Bijan Robinson at number 12. Like, I don't, and you don't want to trade for Trey Lance and you don't want to trade for Mac Jones, you really don't have another choice. I don't think that's the route the Texans are going. DeMeco's talked openly about how they're going to bring in two quarterbacks. So I believe that. I believe the Texans are going to bring in two quarterbacks. But if they all of a sudden have a pivot and that's the route they're going, I don't think they're going to have a choice. And I do like the idea of collecting talent. Like, I'm a huge collect talent. Once you're, like, you know, collected enough, put yourself in a position to win, go win. I don't think Bijan Robinson's going to be there at 12, quite frankly, and I think Darnell Washington's a reach at 33. I think Washington, that's too early for him.
I don't anymore. I think that the way his name and workouts and everything have been surfacing, I think he's climbing. I was hoping he'd be around in the third round or late second round. I think he's a first-round pick now, possibly.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any odds on that. I don't see him going that high. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get to the Rockets. They're about to go under their second wave of interviews coming up, and a new name suddenly on the list as well for the Houston Rockets. Who are your favorites to be the next head coach of the local basketball team? 713-780-3776, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Blankers.
Yes.
There's a new name in the Rockets coaching search. Kinda. We all knew it was coming. Nick Nurse is going to be part of the second round of interviews, but it looks like the Rockets might be down to, is it fair to say this, you think, down to three candidates, Semi Udoka, Frank Vogel, and now Nick Nurse, the latest name that's on the list after he and Toronto agreeing to part ways?
I don't know, because, you know, it's kind of like the Mario Elie syndrome as it relates to Kenny Atkinson. I think Kenny Atkinson could be a good fit here, but I think that he's a victim of still being in the playoffs, and if you remember, I use that analogy because Mario was the hottest assistant coaching name out there the year he was with Dallas, and Dallas went too deep in the playoffs. Everybody hired coaches, and then he never was heard from again as a candidate, and it was unfortunate. I think Kenny Atkinson is ready to take a head coaching job again. I think he's coached young teams, and I'd love to say that, not that he is the guy, but I'd love to see him get another interview. I just think because they're still playing, he won't, and I think he's out. So I think with that said, I already told you, I don't think James Borrego is the right guy, and I don't think he's a guy that I want to consider. So if those are the three that you're down to, and Sam Cassell was interviewed, I think, more as a kind of a courtesy and a formality as an ex-Rocket than he was as a viable consideration for Rafael Stone. I think those are the three guys.
Battery Chuck pretty much echoes my sentiments as well. Just don't want another first-time head coach.
Correct.
That's where I'm at. How do you say his name? Borrego?
Borrego. James Borrego, yep.
I'd be okay with him. Now, he's like, if we have a list of four, if we, you know, you let's I'll agree with your logic. I think it's sound logic. I like your theory that Kenny Atkinson's name's probably not going to end up being really considered because victim of the own, you know, their success, I guess, mm-hmm. unless maybe they get ousted in the first round. But I think it's probably down to those four: Adoka, Vogel, Nurse, and Borrego. He's fourth on my list. Vogel's third, Nick Nurse is second, and Adoka's one. I'd be happy with three of the four, though. I'd be happy with the three of my top four.
Now, if you're the Rockets, though, Jeremy, you got to be really careful right now because you put Silas on notice as quick as you could, so you had your pick of the litter. I think what you saw is one of the guys that just became a candidate for your job might be the reason why another guy that you have as a candidate won't be in the running for your job, and it won't be your choice. It's because Ime Udoka knows Toronto because he knows and is very, very good friends with the general manager. They've worked together in the past. They know each other well. And I think the reason why Nick Nurse was set free is because their number one priority is to get Ime Udoka to Toronto. If that's the case, yeah. Now of the three candidates, you've got some shuffling and some quick thinking to do because you might not be down. You might be down to two before you have anything to say because, again, if you're Ime Udoka, maybe a better, younger roster in Houston, but you know who you know. And if you know the general manager, you know going in that there's a working relationship and an established relationship that you don't have to question coming in. If you're Ime Udoka and you don't know Rafael Stone, and you come in and go, man, I don't know what this guy's all about. I've heard all these rumors. Even in these interviews, I can't be sure that he's not going to be a guy that as soon as I sign on the bottom line that, you know, he changes and everything changes. And so as much as you are intrigued and like Nick Nurse, an ex-Rockets coach, coming back as a candidate, I think you and I were both in agreement Udoka was our number one choice, and he might be off the list because of the fact that that's why they got rid of Nurse, because they want Udoka.
I feel that same way. I feel like Udoka is going to be the next Raptors coach. Do you think that job's more attractive than the Rockets?
It shouldn't be. I don't think
that's
it should
I
be.
Think.
I don't think at all. From cost of living to taxes to the roster itself, to the city, although a lot of people love Toronto, I can't see that. But I think that Udoka needs stability. We know that it's not about his ability to coach basketball. It's his ability to reprove himself overall as a head coach and all the responsibilities that go with it. And so I think it's hyper important for him to be as comfortable as he can be with every element around him. I don't think he has that comfort level in Houston. I know he's got that comfort level with Masai Ujiri with the Raptors, and I think that's why that job is better for him.
The only thing I question with Udoka is, you know, we talk about experience and first-time head coach. He only coached for a year, and he had a great basketball team. Like, and that's proven by what the Celtics are doing now, superstar-level players. Is there any concerns that this is Silas Light? Like, he can't handle 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. I mean, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, those guys are vets. Like, it's not the same apples and oranges, the Celtics and where they were at compared to where the Rockets are now. So I do kind of question, like, if the experience is really there for him because it's only a year.
Well, he cut his teeth under Popovich. He's been an assistant in a lot of places to kind of earn some stripes. And then, as much as I hear what you're saying, Joe, he did take that team to the finals. And, you know, a lot of coaching has to go into, no matter how much talent you have on a team,
for sure,
getting them where they need to go. And if you believe what you've heard in and around and surrounding that team, there were a ton of egos with a ton of, you know, opinions and personalities that were having to be managed on a daily basis. And Marcus Smart used to say about how, you know, Udoka was a key factor in being able to keep control of that locker room and all the different egos.
No, if you look statistically, the Celtics that season were one of the worst teams defensively, basically until January 1st. And then the year turned over and they were the number one team, number two team defensively the entire year. Like, it took them a little bit to get the guys to buy in. But once they bought in, they were on a different trajectory as a franchise. Like, you definitely see it. There's such elite talent there. I do it. But the same thing for Nick Nurse.
But
he didn't win nothing without Kawhi Leonard.
You're right. But here's the other thing. You also have to be a victim of your own circumstance with your roster. When you look at how young this roster is, as weird as this may sound, I'm not sure how many guys in that locker room know who Nick Nurse is and know that he took the Raptors to a title. I think that a lot of people know what Ime Udoka did, who he did it with, and where and how far they got with him as head coach, to where I think, as strange as it is, because of how young this locker room is, I think there's more respect instantaneously for Udoka than there is for a Nick Nurse who paid his dues and won a title.
I think that's more prisoner of the moment. Like, they have to know who Nick Nurse is.
They don't have to.
Jeremy, I think Joel's – I don't think he's wrong.
You don't think they know who Nick Nurse is? They're playing against him.
When did they win?
But they don't know his resume. They don't know to respect him.
They don't
him.
Know that Kawhi Leonard won a championship with the Toronto
dude, they
Raptors
were like,
coached
dude, they
by
were
Nick
14.
Nurse.
Yeah, I don't know that they do.
Most of these guys were like 14 or 15 years old. Like
that,
I don't,
that was 4 years ago.
Exactly. Jalen Green's 20.
So he was 16.
Okay, so 16. Jabari Smith was 15.
I think a lot of guys. Like, I think a lot of guys know Kawhi won a title. I don't think a lot of guys know who his head coach was.
They weren't watching basketball. They weren't watching the NBA Finals and saw that redheaded coach.
Dude, look what happened.
He's blonde.
Look at what happened this NFL season. Who was the clown that spouted off about Jeff Saturday, saying he didn't know who Jeff Saturday was?
That was Jeff Saturday hasn't been relevant.
No,
since
I know.
He played,
but like these guys were 15, 16. Like if they didn't know who Nick Nurse was, I really wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't either.
I don't know about that.
Okay. I just would not be shocked if a 15-year-old didn't know who the head coach of the Raptors was.
The bigger
when they
point
won a
is
that's a little different, but I think you recognize the name and recognize the face.
Yeah, probably.
But the bigger point is you got to get someone who has clout enough to gain instant respect in that locker room. And I think of the two guys, I think Udoka would command the room more than Nurse, whether that's fair or not.
This isn't blonde hair, by the way. He's got brown hair that dyes it blonde. In fact, you know what? I'm out on Nick Nurse. He dyes his hair blonde. Nah, he can't resonate with this Houston Rockets roster. I'm out on Nick Nurse because he dyes his hair blonde.
Okay.
I'm out. I don't
mean,
like
everybody,
that. I don't
to each his own.
Coach.
Everybody's got their own criteria.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. 713-780-ESPN. Blankers, I think the NBA is going soft. This sounds like me every time I talk about the NBA.
Or James anything. Harden, you just like that word soft.
I think a lot of people are soft these days.
I know.
Yeah, I think I'm right. Anyways, the James Harden ejection yesterday, I thought that was ridiculous. I thought the Joel Embiid thing, like, that shouldn't have been an ejection, but if that's not an ejection, how is the Harden play an ejection? And how is the Draymond Green play an ejection? I don't like the consistency that we're seeing. I don't like all these ejections. Let the game, let the players determine,
I
thought that was a cheap shot. Well, I'm going to give that guy a cheap shot. Bring me back the bad boy Pistons, early 90s basketball. Let the players police it. I'm tired of these ejections. I'm tired of these flagrant fouls.
I don't think Harden should have been ejected. I could see him getting a flagrant for that. I could see him getting a technical for that. I don't think he should have been ejected. I think Joel Embiid, if you're going to, especially because of the recency, if you're going to eject Draymond Green and you're going to suspend him for a game, then you've got to do the same thing to Joel Embiid. And Tony Brothers, as a veteran official, to come out after the game and say it was about where the contact was made. So essentially, because Harden ended up hitting him in the junk, that Harden was gone. And I don't know how closely they looked to see if they could actually verify he got hit in the junk. But I think that when you look at Joel Embiid, his intent was to get him in the junk. He just didn't get him in the junk. So that's like saying, you know, if Shaq or someone winds up and throws a haymaker, if he doesn't land it, then he didn't hit him in a key spot. So he can stay in the game. But if he throws a open hand slap and it catches him above the shoulders or in the groin, he's gone. I think that's ridiculous. What you saw with Draymond, if that's the way the league decided to handle it, then Joel Embiid should be handled the same way. If you try and kick someone in the Johnson, whether you connect or swing and miss, the intent is still there. And I believe that if the league is going to keep their integrity, and I think that now because it's an open door to do it because they're up so big in the series, it won't matter. I think they're going to suspend Embiid for a game for the kick. But I think that's only just trying to save face. I don't think James should have been ejected. I think that if you're going to do that to Draymond, then I think that Joel Embiid should have.
Yeah, I don't like the consistency. I don't like how soft the league is getting. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's everybody's favorite game but mine. We do it each and every Friday at 2 o'clock where Joe's going to try to stump us with things that were said by ESPN 97.5 personalities. We'll guess the quote. Joe will play the clip, see if the Killer Bees have any sort of success. coming up this week on Who Said It Next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. They can't stop talking about him on Twitch because they know how he gets results on a daily basis. Johnny G will tell you that. I'll tell you that. Fred Fowler will tell you that. You could be the next to start telling people about the good things of Doc Linville and the NeoGraft procedure. NeoGraft procedure, if you're not familiar, it's taking hair where you're never going to lose it, the sides and the back of your head, putting it where you need it most. Maybe it's on back on the top, or maybe it's your hairline. But the bottom line is, if you go see Doc Linville, who I think is the best in the business, he's going to make sure that you get your confidence back because you get your hair back, and you keep that hair for the long haul. The best stat that he's going to tell you that he told me, 95-plus percent and more like 99% of the follicles that are moved are going to stay. They're going to grow. They're going to be stronger and longer and be with you for the long haul. That's what won me over. But as an ESPN listener, you can get all the details, ask all the questions, get all the answers, and see if it's right for you with absolutely no obligation and no money out of pocket. Just go to 975hair.com. Make an appointment. It's free as an ESPN listener instead of $150. And then go in and ask all the questions. Get all the data and make the decision. If you decide to do it, you won't be upset that you did, because they take care of you every step of the way. It's an easy procedure, and it's really, in my opinion, painless. And then as you watch the recovery process, you can already see the follicles in place and growing. And then as you go 6 months into it, you're going to see them get stronger and longer and give you a better overall appearance on a daily basis. I'm super glad I did the procedure. I'd recommend it to anybody. I'm recommending it to you right now. Go to 975hair.com right now and go see my friend Doc Linville.